You're listening to Central Time. I'm Lee Rayburn and for Rob Ferret. It's the first libel case against the New York Times to go to trial in nearly two decades, and it was just thrown out by the judge this afternoon before the jury could reach a verdict. Brought by Sarah Palin, the former Republican governor of Alaska and 2008 vice presidential candidate, she said the New York Times defamed her in an editorial where they incorrectly linked her and her super PAC with a mass shooting in Arizona. Now, will the appeals process pave the way to a Supreme Court that has signaled that they may be inclined to revisit libel laws in the United States? And what's next, then, for Sarah Palin versus the New York Times? Journalists are watching because it may portend what's next for them. We want to know what you think about this case at 1-800-642-1234, whether or not you've been following it, what you think about the judge's decision to throw out the case before the jury had a chance to weigh in. Are libel laws in the U.S. good the way they are, or do they need some updates? What do you think? 1-800-642-1234. Always email us, ideas@WPR.org. Enrique Armijo is a professor of law at the Elon University School of Law in North Carolina, an expert on First Amendment and media law. Enrique, welcome to Central Time.
Great to be with you, Lee.
So a lot of news on this story today, but to start, and can you just lay out what is at issue in this case and what may be at stake ultimately?
Sure. And you laid it out well in your intro, Lee. Basically, what happened was that the New York Times published an editorial in 2017 after the congressional shooting at the Ellipse in Washington. And it was really about denouncing demonization of political opponents on both sides of the aisle. And as you also said in the intro, in that article, the initial draft of that article didn't reference Sarah Palin's PAC at all, but in a revision of that article, the editorial page editor, whose name was James Bennett, added this connection between the Gabby Gifford shooting, which took place in 2011, and a poster that Sarah Palin's PAC put out that had gunshot sites on certain congressional districts, including Congresswoman Giffords. And then James Bennett, the line that he added, said that there was no sign of incitement in the 2017 example as there was in 2011. Pretty soon after this comes out, almost immediately, the New York Times goes through this kind of internal debate and discussion about whether it was right, the reference that the Sarah Palin PAC poster had incited the Gabby Gifford shooting, whether or not that was accurate. And basically, about 14 hours after the editorial initially runs on the New York Times website, that line is taken out. So really what Sarah Palin sought to do is say that the New York Times should be liable for a mistake. The mistake here being, as I said, claiming a connection between the poster and the Gifford shooting. And what Judge Rakoff said really just about an hour ago was that a mistake wasn't enough, that under the First Amendment, what Governor Palin had to show was what's known as actual malice, which is a technical term in defamation law. It comes from a case in 1964 called New York Times versus Sullivan that says that when the person bringing a defamation claim, when the plaintiff is a public official or public figure, they have to show that the defamatory statement was made with knowledge of its falsity or with reckless disregard as to whether or not it was true. And what Judge Rakoff basically said this afternoon was that Governor Palin had put forth no evidence that that Mr. Bennett knew that what he said about her was false, that this was just a mistake. Mr. Bennett even said on the stand that he regretted making the mistake, but that wasn't enough under the First Amendment for the New York Times to be liable for defamation.
Enrique Armijo, our guest, professor of law at the Elon University School of Law in North Carolina. And so while the judge threw out Sarah Palin's case against the New York Times earlier today, jury deliberations are continuing despite the judge's ruling. Enrique, why is this?
Well, it's certainly odd for Judge Rakoff to have basically announced his decision, his judgment. The technical term here is judgment notwithstanding the verdict. So what that means is that the New York Times is going to win regardless of what the jury says. But what Judge Rakoff said in open court today was that he is certain that Governor Palin is going to appeal. As you also said in your intro, there's this kind of climate around the actual malice standard that is open for debate. As you also said in the open, the Supreme Court, or at least two members of the Supreme Court, seem open to it. So what he wants to do is give the appellate courts the benefit of the jury's findings of fact with respect to what the New York Times did and didn't do. So for that reason, he basically is permitting the jury to continue to deliberate. And really, you know, it's a little bit ironic at this point that the only people who don't know that Judge Rakoff is going to throw out this case are those jurors that are deliberating right now.
Oh, wow. So the two justices on the Supreme Court that are Clarence Thomas and Neil Gorsuch, but also through some tough media firestorms, the appointments of Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court. What would your take be if this were appealed all the way to the Supreme Court, and how the current makeup of the Supreme Court may come down on this issue of libel in 2022?
Well, it's certainly true that if for Governor Palin to win, the Supreme Court is going to have to change the law. And it's the only court in the federal system that can do that, right? The lower courts are constrained by Supreme Court precedent and other precedent to follow the law. You know, Judge Rakoff even kind of made some statements this afternoon that, you know, it pains me to hold this way, but the law is forcing me to hold this way. And if I were the New York Times, I would be a little bit worried. You know, it takes four justices to hear a case. As you already said, we have two that we know what they think, that they want to reconsider this. And then we have another two, as you also said, that haven't really spoken on this issue. But there is a lot of momentum towards kind of revisiting this idea that it should be really hard for public people to sue for defamation. And Judge Gorsuch, in his recent opinion on this, talks about the fact that, and you can, you know, you can take him for, you can agree with him or not, but what he says is that the media is very different than it was in 1964. It would be kind of ironic to overturn New York Times versus Sullivan in a case that also involves the New York Times. but that, you know, because as I said, you know, what Gorsuch talks about a lot in his, you know, in his opinion is the idea that the media is not the institutional media. There's a lot more fact checking. The internet has caused defamation plaintiffs to be false and loose with the truth. There's a lot more defamation out there. But, you know, the New York Times is going to have to be prepared to defend not just the result in this case, but also the rule in Sullivan that makes it harder for them and other media outlets to be sued for defamation.
Enrique Armijo, I am a journalist in a world that has changed our libel laws as we see them as a result of this case in the not so distant future. If our libel laws were to change as a result of this case, ultimately based on appeal and potentially going all the way to the Supreme Court, what changes for journalists?
Well, it's important to point out that the when we talk about the media, and I get the Gorsuch did mention this in his recent opinion, we're not just talking about the New York Times. You know, Fox News and One America News and Newsmax are all being sued. Your listeners might know by Dominion Voting Systems for some statements that were made on those television stations by guests and hosts with respect to some false statements about Dominion and its involvement in some false allegations about its involvement in rigging the election. In all of those cases, all of those media outlets are relying on the actual malice standard. So in other words, Fox News is saying we have to be able to report on the fact that that the president of the United States is claiming that the election was rigged. And that involves reporting what the president and others are saying about Dominion voting systems. If we're only reporting, we're not reporting with actual malice. So what the defenders of the actual malice standard have said and are going to say is that in the absence of this extra protection, we're going to be less likely to do things like write about editorials of the kind the New York Times wrote. We're going to be less likely to report on public figures and public officials. And the net result of that is less commentary. And that's really what the First Amendment is intended to protect and promote.
Our guest, Enrique Armijo, professor of law at Elon University in North Carolina. He stays with us for a closer look at the former Alaskan Governor Sarah Palin's libel lawsuit against the New York Times, a case thrown out by a judge this afternoon, but that may continue on appeal, and the jury continues to deliberate in that case. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. What do you think about libel laws as they stand now in the U.S.? Do they need to be changed, scaled back? Would you like to see stronger protections for journalists? What questions do you have for our guest about how libel laws work and your First Amendment rights? 1-800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn and for Rob Ferret today, and we're picking up on our look at libel laws in the U.S. and what's at stake in a libel lawsuit against the New York Times that was thrown out by a judge today, but may certainly continue on appeal. We want to hear from you, your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234. Our guest this afternoon is Enrique Armijo. He's a professor of law at the Elon University School of Law. And Enrique, I'm curious what your takeaway was from some of the testimony in this case, the testimony of Sarah Palin in the New York Times in the first libel case of the New York Times to go to court in about 20 years. It promised to open up and expose the process of newsmaking and editorializing inside the New York Times. What did we learn?
Yeah, I think if those who are following the trial closely might have found that, you know, the process of writing an editorial at the old gray lady, the great New York Times, is a lot messier than they might have thought. You had the editorial page editor, right? The person who was in charge of the editorials at the Times, writing a time-sensitive, on-deadline column, or supervising the writing of a column, and putting things in the column, putting facts in the column that were not entirely supported either by his own research or by things that the newspaper itself had reported. And, you know, as I said earlier, you know, Mr. Bennett got on the stand and said that this was a mistake and this was my fault. But the strategy of the New York Times lawyers, and the successful strategy, as we saw today, was that the mistake is not enough. The Palin strategy here was to kind of show that the New York Times was biased against her, that this was part of the kind of the liberal media versus the conservative heartland, that they looked down on her, that they thought less of her, that they thought she was a gun nut, and that was enough to kind of supply this mental state that the standard of actual malice requires. But at the end of the day, they didn't really have any facts. They didn't develop any facts that tended to show, again, that Mr. Bennett knew that what he was writing was false. At most, he didn't know it was true. He kind of let his rhetorical flourishes get the best of him. He quickly regretted that. You know, there are text messages and email messages late that night and early in the morning, Mr. Bennett communicating with the reporter Elizabeth Williamson, who wrote the column, communicating with Ross Douthat, who's this very prominent conservative editorial page writer at the New York Times, that basically said to Mr. Bennett in an email, "I don't think what you said is right." And then you had this kind of scramble on the part of Mr. Bennett trying to right this wrong, which he admitted was a wrong, but he didn't write this knowing that it was false. And for purposes of actual malice, that's what Sarah Palin needed to show by clear and convincing evidence. And as we've said, Judge Rakoff said she wasn't able to do that.
And the Supreme, or at least two members of the Supreme Court, have at least suggested that they'd be willing to revisit that. So what happens to this case next, Enrique?
Well, Governor Palin, as Judge Rakoff said in court today, she is going to appeal to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, which is also in New York City. That's the kind of federal court of appeal that hears trial court, hears appeals of trial court decisions in the Southern District of New York. The Second Circuit Court of Appeals is going to side with Judge Rakoff. You know, based on the current law, okay, I don't think there's really anything that they're going to be able to help Governor Palin here. And then, as we said earlier, what Governor Palin is going to try to do is appeal to the Supreme Court for an actual change in the law.
And we'll see if they take that case up. Let's go quickly to Erica in Lake Tomahawk. While we're short on time, I want to get this question in. Erica, you're on with Enrique Armijo.
Hello.
Hi.
I would just like to kind of know, where is the line drawn with some clown like Tucker Carlson, or a clown like our ex-president, who seems to be able to say pretty much anything and call it entertainment? I mean, could could this editorial writer say, "Oh, I was just fooling around"?
Eric, I appreciate the question because it goes to the heart of this case to some degree. I mean, where do you draw that line, Enrique?
Then that's actually some of the critiques about the actual malice standard I think are justified, because what they require, as the caller kind of implied, is the state of mind with respect to the person who made the statement. And, you know, our you know, it's the former president, whatever you think of him, certainly in his mind, believed the things that he said were true. So, you know, by his lights, you know, he's never made a false statement. If all you can go by, all you can look at to decide whether or not something is true or false is the subjective police of the subjective state of mind of the person saying it. So it does create real evidentiary problems for defamation plaintiffs to try to find through some other evidence whether or not someone actually thought what they were saying was true.
Yeah, in our last
so
60
it is a
seconds,
robust defense.
I'm curious, you know, as a professor of law and a specialist in the First Amendment rights, how could we begin to redefine what libel could mean outside of the actual malice standard?
I think the way if libel law is going to change, I think we need to look more at the damages side. You know, I think there are good arguments you could make that this case was never really brought, never should have been brought. The reason it never should have been brought is because Sarah Palin never was able to make any definitive statement with respect to any opportunity she lost or any monetary damages that she had as a result of this case. So one thing we could do is make defamation plaintiffs have very strong evidence of actual damages that they've suffered as a result of defamatory statement, and that might narrow the potential liability of the media to those cases in which their false statements have really caused defamatory harm.
And one of the evidences that was brought in by the defense for the New York Times was Sarah Palin's appearance on The Masked Singer on Fox after the editorial came out.
Yeah, and it is interesting, you know, she does seem to have had kind of a semi-retreat from public life, but I don't think anybody in the courtroom was persuaded that that was a result of what the New York Times had written
about
her in this editorial.
We're going to have to leave it there, but I appreciate your time this afternoon. Thank you.
Great, thanks.
Enrique Armijo teaches about media and First Amendment law at the Elon University School of Law in North Carolina. On with us to talk about the judge's decision earlier today to throw out Sarah Palin's libel lawsuit against the New York Times and what could happen next if the case is appealed.